Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil. Bellerín, qué golazo.
Magnífico.
Gol. Qué golazo de Bellerín. Gol del Arsenal. Gran gol de Bellerín, 1-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Well,
it's
last
a somber
week,
occasion, isn't it?
Last week we said it doesn't get much better than this. And unfortunately, that was prophetic.
Yes, hubristic of us, really. Look at us now. We look like fools. Bet last week everyone was thinking, those guys have got the greatest job in the world. They get to sit on a podcast, chat about all the wonderful things in life and football.
Mm.
And now we have to sit here. We're not basking, are we? What's the inverse? What are we doing?
I don't know what the inverse of basking is. We're wallowing, I think, might be the word.
We might be wallowing.
It wasn't very good in any sense.
No, I'm going to go as far as to say that it was actively quite bad.
Yeah. Was it more bad, more badder, worser, a bit like
badderer.
My English, badderer? Because of the preseason, because of the expectations, because we had sort of hoped that this team had finally managed to put an end to its, what's the word I'm looking for, its mental frailties to a certain extent, that, you know, we won the FA Cup, we've got a settled squad, it's confident, we're cohesive. With all the cohesion, what happened to all the cohesion? One minute you've got all the cohesion, next minute there's no cohesion whatsoever. Did we use up all our cohesion in preseason? I mean, the questions that we get to in the second half of the podcast are obviously something we'll come to, but there's a lot of them just going, why? What happened?
Yeah, and I think that's a valid question, and not an easy one to answer.
No.
I think it is worse because of the level of expectation. You know, I know in your blog this morning you touched on the Aston Villa game. What was it, 2 years ago now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do think, obviously, there are parallels in that we started the season with a defeat at home, some pretty diabolical defending. But obviously, at that time, you know, that was a team that I think everybody knew was flawed. Everybody knew wasn't ready.
Mm.
Whereas this year, we felt, going into this game, I think everybody felt that we were in a stronger position last year, we were building on what we had, and that we were, if not ready, then certainly close to launching a serious title challenge. And I feel like yesterday really damaged our credibility in that respect. And yeah, it's like somebody's burst our balloon, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, they've not only burst it, they've sort of taken it out the back and fired a load of shotguns at it.
Which, that would be a bit pointless, because once a balloon is burst, there's not much else you can do to destroy it.
I know, but this is a very vindictive person who's done this. It's Slaven Bilic.
What a bastard.
I know, he doesn't care about
the
balloon.
Yeah. The point I was going to make that I've just forgotten, that I'm now going to talk for a minute just so I can try and remember if I can, and I can't, as it happens. I'm trying to think of it, and I really can't. There was a point. What were you just saying? Not the bit about balloons. Oh, expectations and balloons. And no, I'm completely blank. I think it's kind of sapped the very life out of me. Ah, yes, I remember now. The fact that people thought we were ready, the fact that we'd gone through preseason with good wins, lots of clean sheets, we'd just come off the back of a win against Chelsea, and that expectation was there. Do you think, perhaps, that there might have been a measure of just turn up and win that we've kind of seen before? You know, you've got to think that if they played in the same way against West Ham as they did against Chelsea, that you don't lose.
Maybe.
I don't want to say arrogance, you know, but just this overconfidence, perhaps.
Complacency, maybe.
Yeah, Arsene Wenger said the team was nervous. I don't buy that for a second. I don't think the team was nervous. I think that's just sort of something that he says in a post-game press conference when he's asked, what happened to your team. It's very difficult for a manager to say, well, we just played like shit. Mm. You know, you've got to try and find the underlying reason why you played like shit. But I think that's what it boils down to more than anything, is we just played like shit. I don't think we were nervous or anything like that. So, yeah, it's difficult to understand.
It's really difficult to understand. I mean, I think a lot of it is down to... I was about to say a lot of it's down to defensive errors, but to be honest, I don't think we were very good going forward at all either. I really felt like we were as bad on the front foot as we were on the back foot.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, people will talk about the goalkeeper.
They will, and we will now, presently.
Yeah, indeed. They will, and we will, simultaneously. I mean, that's in some ways a sort of microcosmic example of what yesterday felt like. You know, the player who was supposedly the great solution, who was going to bring this sense of calm and experience to the back four, was probably the one perhaps most culpable in the two goals we conceded.
Well,
so,
yeah, 12 to 15 points he'll save us apparently this season.
Well, he's on -3 at the moment.
Man, what a fucking hat-trick in the next game if he wants to make up for it. I mean, look, you know, as welcome as the signing was, and I think you can be happy that he signed, I never quite got how he was the difference between us winning the title and not winning the title when our issues last season were very much not about the goalkeeper. There was maybe once or twice, I think, over the course of the Premier League season where the goalkeeper was unconvincing and you could look at a game where perhaps the goalkeeper cost us points. In general, while the goalkeeping situation wasn't as assured as you might like it, it wasn't why we didn't challenge for the title, right? So I never quite understood that about the signing of Cech. Brings great experience, been there, done that, worn the T-shirt. Is the T-shirt a bit raggedy and faded?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, what did you make of the first goal yesterday, the free kick, the set piece?
I thought the defending was abysmal. The organisation was really bad. I think we could see that, you know, when you look at replays. Players aren't making it difficult for the West Ham players. You know, I think it was Monreal who was on Kouyaté. Wasn't goal side. Now, I know you're trying to step up maybe and look for the offside thing, but, you know, when the ball starts to come in, you've got to at least get in his way and make it difficult for him to get a header. As it was, he just ran unopposed into the box. There was far too much space in front between the goalkeeper and the defensive line. And West Ham, I think Arsene Wenger said it, he said, if the quality of the ball going in there was good, I knew we could be in trouble. And that's very much what happened. It was a great ball in from who was it? Payet? How do you pronounce his name?
Yeah, I think so. Dimitri Payet. Yeah.
Yeah. And so look, we made a mistake, compounded by a goalkeeping error, because I think he obviously wanted to try and be decisive on his home debut. Come out and, you know, if he comes out and he punches that away, it sort of gives you a bit of a lift of momentum. You're going, yes, goalkeeper, you're fantastic. But the two things together, a goalkeeping mistake and defensive misorganization, unorganization, deorganization, what's the word?
Fuck up.
You know, it just looked bad for everyone. So obviously it looks worse for Petr Cech, but I think it was a combination of things.
I mean, with a situation like that, what I always wonder is, well, if Cech doesn't come, Kouyaté's still got that free header, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not assured that if he just stays on his line, he could have headed the ball left or right of him.
Exactly.
You know, so... And you are talking split-second stuff, but...
It looked bad. It certainly looked bad because he ended up in kind of no man's land.
Mm.
But I do think, in that instance, the defence are as culpable for allowing that header to be completely free.
I think what was the most worrying thing for me was that what a typically Arsenal goalkeeping mistake that was. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I said on Twitter, if he pulled off his hat and revealed it was Manuel Almunia in there, you wouldn't have been too surprised.
You know, or Fabianski, or Chesney's had a couple of moments like that where he's come and misjudged. And, you know, I know you can't really put everything down yesterday on the goalkeeper or what might be going on behind the scenes on the training ground. But, you know, that instant familiarity with a goalkeeping mistake perhaps suggests that there's work to do between the goalkeeping and the defending.
So do you think the goalkeeping staff are running drills on that, just charging out into no man's land? Telling them, on a dangerous set piece, the ideal thing to do is place yourself in a useless position between the goal line and the penalty spot. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I thought it was interesting. Matt Spiro was talking on Twitter about Christoph Lolichon, and this was Czech's first game without him. For a long time, and perhaps one of the roles of the goalkeeping coach isn't just sort of day-to-day training and what you do on the training ground, but it's part of getting the goalkeeper mentally ready for the game.
Perhaps so, and also perhaps a degree of specific preparation, you know, like talking about West Ham set pieces, things like that, how they might play it. So perhaps he missed that element of preparation too.
Yeah. What about the second goal? Have you any fault could be applied to him for the second goal?
Again, it looks bad, I have to say. Koscielny came in for a bit of stick, didn't he, for sort of allowing the shot to get away relatively free?
Yeah, I think Koscielny was standing there holding his balls. Cazorla stood off. Coquelin kind of stood off a little bit as well. Oxlade-Chamberlain, of course, was the man who made the initial mistake, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But, you know, the keeper takes a step one way and a guy puts the ball in at the near post. You know, I felt he was let down a bit more there for that one. I don't think he could put as much of that goal down to Czech as the first one.
Maybe. I mean, I think he was wrong-footed, as you say, and a bit disguised. But, you know, I think back to my reaction to David Ospina against Monaco when that ball deflected from 30 yards, and I felt he ought to have done better to readjust his position. I think I would have to say the same of Czech here. I think if your concern about the goalkeeper was, you know, his age or something like that, you might have felt a little bit troubled by how slow he was getting down to the ground there. But I mean, I'm not by any means suggesting that, well, he's not a good goalkeeper, he's not a good signing, but it was undoubtedly a bit of a disastrous debut.
Yeah, it really was. One to forget, but maybe he could be like one of those albums that you listen to the first time and you go, that's not very good. And then the second time you go, it's not bad. And then, you know, it's a grower. And it lasts longer. It's not like an instant catchy pop song that after three listens you're going, well, that's terrible. We don't want that. You know, so maybe his season will, well, hopefully it will improve. It would want to. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, though, guilty of a mistake when the ball, Coquelin sort of slid in and took the ball off Oxlade-Chamberlain's feet practically, but he took it out of defence, and it's not the first time we've seen him lose the ball in that position on the pitch. That's something he's really going to have to be aware of and work on, no?
Yeah, and it's a shame because I felt in the first half he was probably our brightest player. There were a couple of excellent runs, that brilliant volley which dipped just wide. And I thought, you know, he was on a really good track, but that was quite naive what he did there. I think he did a similar thing earlier in the game. So I do think he's probably having missed so much of last season with injury, probably desperate to make an impression and might be a little bit guilty of overcomplicating it. A bit of simplicity in his game and conservative choices in that part of the pitch would certainly help him out.
What did you make of the decision to use Alexis? Desperate times, desperate measures and all that, but I have to say it was a bit of a farce.
Yeah, he didn't look ready, did he?
No. Why would he be, though?
Because he's a superhero?
Well, we know that. Superhero and strong, and he's done his training on the beach, but, you know, it was... I don't know. Is that a reflection of maybe that perhaps there is room for one more attacker in our squad? I know Danny Welbeck is out injured, but... You know, the bench yesterday was three defenders, Mikel Arteta, Theo Walcott, and Alexis Sanchez. There used to be a time, and we maybe had this last season where we were top heavy. You know, we had too many attackers in the squad, and that was, you know, we were imbalanced. But perhaps it's gone a little bit too far the other way.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a case for that. I remember looking at the substitutes bench when it came out yesterday and thinking, oh, there's an awful lot of defenders. I can't really foresee a circumstance where we'll need all those players.
Mm.
Little did I know that we should have had a lot more defenders on the field in the end, given the way that we played. But I think Alexis, I mean, what's strange about that is that Arsene Wenger's always so keen to avoid reliance on one individual. He always preaches about a collective game, but I felt the way that Alexis was drafted in so absurdly quickly, having returned to training, suggests that he does feel a slight dependency on him, don't you think?
Yeah, but maybe he just didn't have any other attacking option. I mean, what was his alternative yesterday to Alexis? And I think, frankly, you know, he shouldn't have been on the bench. I think if you're going to talk about how players need rest and they need, you know, to come back from their holidays and they then need to be eased into, you know, fitness and preseason properly, I just don't think you can then put a player like Alexis on the bench. But what were his alternatives, like using Iwobi or the Jeff?
The Jeff. Maybe.
Would the criticism not be just as much if you're relying on a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old?
Perhaps so. I think that maybe it's like, it shows the slight folly of letting Tuber Akpom go out on loan so early in the transfer window. I thought that they'd certainly wait until Danny Welbeck and Alexis were available again before letting him move on. And I did think that we were a little bit light on attacking options on the bench yesterday. So that was a little bit frustrating. I mean, you know, Theo Walcott came on after half an hour, but I think it was it 2-0 by that point?
Yeah, Walcott came on. They were about to bring Walcott on just before they got the second goal.
Yeah, so I felt like at that point, West Ham were able to sit deep and defend a two-goal lead, and that's not really Theo's game, is it, to break down a packed defence like that?
No. He didn't have much of an impact at all, to be honest.
No. What did you make of the performance, speaking of attacking options, of Olivier Giroud?
Well, look, I think he struggled like everybody else struggled. Yeah. You know, I don't think he was particularly bad, and I don't think the reason we lost was down to Giroud not being the world-class striker that everyone wants. Clearly, the issues were at the other end. I mean, I thought it was odd to see him out on the left quite as often as he was. There was one moment where he took a brilliant touch with his left foot and then got taken out of it by Tompkins. But a couple of times, he was the guy down the left-hand side trying to get a cross in. There was one he put in for, well, there was nobody there, and Adrian fumbled it and had somebody actually been in there. I think Ozil arrived a little bit later. You know, we might have scored, but why is your central striker the guy putting in crosses? You know, the team didn't look balanced at all yesterday in terms of the way it was set up. And I know the manager likes a fluidity and he likes his players to be able to interchange positions and move around the pitch, and that's good. But, you know, I don't think we did enough to get the best out of Giroud, and I don't think he played particularly well, but I don't think he was any worse than anyone else. Certainly there were some worse individual performances than his. Francis Coquelin, I thought, for example, had one of those games that he was always due. No, I think Coquelin has been overdue a difficult game or a bad performance. Yeah. You know, he's been so consistently good. I don't think it immediately says that Coquelin is rubbish or anything like that, but I do wonder, yesterday, given the opposition and given the way he'd set up the team with Cazorla and Ramsey and Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right-hand side, I do wonder if in certain games Coquelin is not the guy and if he might have been better with Arteta in there, somebody who's a bit more controlled, who can move the ball around a bit better.
That's an interesting idea. I mean, I think Coquelin, I think, did have a difficult game. I think that you're right that was probably in the post for some time. He'd been in such exceptional form that at some point that's going to desert him for 90 minutes.
Mm.
But Arteta, what do I think? Well, I suppose the reason we missed Arteta in the middle, and we might touch on this in the questions, is maybe because we missed Santi Cazorla in there too. He's stationed out on the left flank, so we didn't really have somebody who, with that patience on the ball and that creative input. So I think that may have been a factor. What did you make of I don't know. What did you make of starting Giroud over Walcott? Do you think that was the right call? Do you think that made any would have made any impact at all to have it the other way around?
I don't know, actually. I was a little bit surprised, but I think maybe he looked at two physical centre-halves and thought Giroud might be the better option. I mean, we don't know what went on in training or what he saw out of training that might have convinced him one way or the other. I don't know.
Maybe
I mean,
thought Giroud would help us on defensive set pieces.
Well, he did make a couple of good clearances, actually, Giroud, from corners, which I remember from the live blog. But, you know, again, I'm not sure Theo Walcott up front would have made a huge difference to what happened yesterday. I'm not sure anyone else up front would have made a huge difference to what happened yesterday, given the failings were at the back, you know. So it was kind of interesting to see the clamour for new signings, and I understand it completely, how people say, well, look, we've got to do more, we've got to get another attacker. But really, our problems were at the back. And I'll take a new striker. I'm not saying that I don't want one or anything like that, but it was defensively and organisationally that we lost the game yesterday. And that's a worry because, you know, as Arsene Wenger pointed out, these are experienced guys at the back there, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's so difficult to explain the kind of defensive resilience that we saw in the Community Shield versus what we saw against West Ham. But I mean, do you think this is like a one-off? Are you sort of, if I had to ask you going forward, you know, we've got a game next weekend. Do you think that we'll see more of those jitters, or do you think that this was just a freak occasion?
I think,
I'm asking you to predict the future. I appreciate that's not necessarily easy to answer.
I think probably my gut feeling is that this was just one of those days. But at the same time, I'm aware that we tend to have just one of those days a bit too often for it to be just one of those days. Does that make any sense? Do you know? I mean, the failings are familiar. The way that we let in the goals, the way that we... I won't necessarily say shit the bed, but, you know, all of a sudden there's expectation and everyone's in a good mood and we contrive to just fuck it up because that's kind of what we do, you know? I obviously was a lot more confident before yesterday's game than I am now because I do wonder what way this is going to affect the team as well because they seemed confident and they seemed, you know, really up for this season. They seemed to be in a good place. And all of a sudden, hang on, you're at home and you can't produce a performance against a team like West Ham with a 16-year-old in the centre of midfield. Now, fair play to him. He was really good and really composed and he doesn't look like a 16-year-old. But at the same time, it's very disappointing, isn't it, when you're playing against a team like West Ham at home. You've got Ramsey, you've got Ozil, you've got Cazorla in midfield, Oxlade-Chamberlain, that these guys can't control a game against Mark Noble and a 16-year-old? That, for me, is a worry.
That is a worry, a big worry, and I agree with you. I was impressed by, is it Reece Oxford? I think that's his name. I think great name for a start.
Yeah.
But I thought he played really well, but... It is a concern because when you look at the 11 we had out, it's not like last year where you can say, oh, you know, they're not ready for the World Cup or there's the big players missing. I felt like this was a team that ought to have been able to make a statement yesterday. And that's what it would have been, especially with Chelsea having dropped points the day before. It felt like there was an opportunity for us to, you know, make a little bit of ground. I mean, every point counts. How many games do champions lose? Not too many.
Yeah.
And you can't. We started so poorly last year. I think that's what really compounds everybody's frustration is that we started so poorly last year, and the focus has been all summer, players and manager saying it's all about making a good start and retaining that consistency across the season. And it's very easy for that to slip away. You know, if we let's say we go next weekend and we draw rather than win, effectively that's. What, 5 points that you've let go, and it's very quick how those kind of gaps can develop.
Yeah, bit of a worry, all right. And Palace is not an easy place to go, as we know from last season. And
by no means, no.
You know, so yeah, all a bit worrying. We'll have to see if they can respond. But yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of knocked the sails out of a lot of people, hasn't it? The performance the result, obviously, but the performance, I think, more than anything, has really kind of taken the wind out of people's sails, which is a huge disappointment, a really feeble, meek way of starting a new season, particularly when, as you say, all the focus has been on make sure we get off to a good start. Let's not make the same mistakes as last season. And boom, there we go.
Pop goes the balloon.
Mm. Yeah.
And then it gets shot lots.
Poor balloon. Right, I think what we'll do is we'll take a short little snippet of music, and then we're going to come back with some of your questions in part two right after this. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra.
Hello.
Hi.
It hasn't got cheerier in that brief break.
No. Not really. This is the part of the show where we answer your questions sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog. Do you want to go first, or will I? Or
does it matter?
No.
Does it matter, Andrew?
No.
I'll go first, shall I?
Okay.
Let's have this. It's Magnus Holmberg, and he says, I think I know the answer to this, but he says, would a guy like Benzema have made a difference yesterday? I guess he has his bad days too, right?
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, you know, for example, the game against Monaco.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When Giroud missed a lot of chances, all the chances, maybe you could say on a day like that, that if you'd had somebody not necessarily better than Giroud, that was, I think, just a bad day for Giroud as well. But, you know, is Benzema the guy who can do, for example, what Thierry Henry did? Can he get a goal in a game when we're struggling, the team isn't playing particularly well? Is he good enough to create something on his own or out of nothing? I don't know him well enough, or I haven't watched him well enough to know whether or not he's that player. What do you think?
I don't know either, and it's difficult to tell when a player's at Real Madrid, right? When they've got, you know, they're in such a strong team with so many brilliant players around them to feed off. You can't really gauge that. You know, I think if someone's a standout player in an average side and dragging them to victory single-handedly, then that's a very different thing. But Benzema is a beneficiary of his environment as well as a great talent. I think that Magnus is kind of right in that I'm not sure that dropping a £50 million striker into the team yesterday necessarily would have made a difference.
Yeah.
That's not to say we shouldn't do it. Not to say I wouldn't like it. And not say it wouldn't improve your chances, but I don't think he's someone who could do what Thierry Henry did against, you know, Liverpool on that occasion. Dribble from the halfway line.
And
genuinely change a game single-handedly through a moment of athleticism or skill. So, no, I'm not sure. Not sure how much difference he would have made. I mean, did you see Arsene Wenger's comments after the game? It didn't sound as if he was particularly open or keen to do any more business.
I think what I got from the comments was that he didn't want to suggest that the reason we lost yesterday was down to lack of transfer activity. And I think that with the players that we've got and with the squad that we've got, I think that's a fair point. You know, you could obscure the issue then, because if you go, well, look, the reason we defended poorly was because we didn't buy a £50 million striker. You know, it's very difficult to make that case, isn't it? But like you say, there's no reason not to get that striker if we can find him and if we can do it. And I think, you know, if we can find him and if we do want to do it, but again, it really doesn't depend entirely on us. You know, if Real Madrid don't want to sell or if Real Madrid can't find the player, you know, we know all this. So I think it's going to play out right to the end of the transfer window. And then, even then, nothing might happen.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely outcome. But I think the fact that, you know, we talked about that Aston Villa game, that was, you know, met with chants of you don't know what you're doing and spend some fucking money and all that kind of thing.
Mm.
And we didn't really hear that yesterday, you know, because I think everyone recognises that this is a squad that's capable of competing. That brings with it its own frustrations when it doesn't,
you know,
when it fails. But I don't think that... I think Arsene's right in that respect, in that I don't think yesterday was a failure of our transfer policy, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that... Maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure there were people who were furious, but the after Aston Villa, it was pure fury.
Sure.
And this, after yesterday, seems just deflation and more than anything else, you know?
I think that's a good distinction, yeah.
Mm. All right, here's a question from Liam Quigley, at Liam J. Quigley, and he wants to know, Ramsey and Coquelin or Cazorla and Coquelin or Cazorla and Coquelin in the middle, and why? Cazorla was playing great there, not as good out wide. Is that going to become an either-or situation?
I don't know. I mean, I touched on this in the first half. I did wonder... I don't think Ramsey had a great game. I mean... Who did, I suppose, is the response to that. You know, which very few individuals came out with too much credit on the Arsenal side. It looked as if Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain might be going that way, and then he made that defensive error. I did miss Cazorla in the middle, I have to say.
But he moved him there at half time.
Yeah, he switched in field, and it didn't change much in that respect,
did
it? No. I mean, maybe that was a mission of a mistake in terms of his initial lineup. I don't know. Would you consider that? What would be your preferred? I know that it's a movable feast. It's a variable thing. But would you have gone with Cazorla in the middle yesterday?
It's difficult to know. I mean, he's trying to move away from that during pre-season.
Definitely.
You know, he wants Ramsey in the middle. I think that's obvious. It's how we then accommodate the others, you know. Has Coquelin become so integral to the team that he's got to play regardless? As I mentioned, you know, we could have played Arteta yesterday ahead of Coquelin. Or maybe you could play a Ramsey Cazorla. I don't know if you can do that. It's difficult because it's, you know, there's no real obvious answer other than what worked very well last season was Coquelin and Cazorla, but it always felt like it was a bit short-term, you know? Like it wasn't the long-term plan, and I think the long-term plan is obviously to get Aaron Ramsey in there. You might wonder whether maybe Ozil could sit a game out from time to time. I don't know. It's really difficult to know what our best midfield is because, I don't know.
I don't know either, but I feel like in Arsene's mind, at any rate, Coquelin is fairly integral, fairly set in that defensive midfield role, and Ozil's fairly set as the number 10. I do feel like it's that kind of little spot in between them that's the one that's up for grabs. And Ramsey didn't do a great 45-minute audition, you know, as Coquelin's partner. But so, yeah, I mean, it's easy to have hindsight after the event, I suppose.
That's the only time you can have hindsight, in fairness.
Yeah, I've tried it before and it's really difficult, honestly. So I don't know with that one. It's one that I feel like it's quite a big question to be answered in this team. And it's a little bit of a, not shadow, but it's something that does need to be sorted over the next couple of months. My only point on it would be that Coquelin and Cazorla worked brilliantly in the second half of last season. And there's a little part of me going, well, if it ain't broke,
yeah,
maybe don't try and fix it.
Mm. So it's up to Ramsey to perform in such a way to dislodge them? Or would you go back to that for Palace?
So, yeah. I'd be tempted, very tempted to, yeah. And I'd probably push Ramsey out wide because I know he's not comfortable there, but I think he can do a job there. And I think, it's until Cazorla and Coquelin, until there's a reason to break that up, say injury or... Well, hopefully not, touch wood, but what have you, or form of another player, I'd probably stick with a formula that was very successful in the second half of last season.
Mm. Okay.
Another question?
Yeah.
So this is from, how do you pronounce that? It's from Charibadis 1966.
Okay.
I gave it a go. There's lots of umlauts in there. He says, should Giroud have been allowed to continue given he was motionless for almost a minute after the clash of heads?
That is a really good question. And I know Arsenal put out a tweet saying that Giroud was not unconscious at any point.
Mm.
That's what they said. So I guess we have to take them at their word, but it looked to me like he was knocked out. The way that he fell, the way that his arms hung when he was being moved onto his side by teammates who obviously were standing looking at him, standing over him, and thought that he was unconscious.
It was a bad sign when he wasn't doing the finger flick.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm not 100% convinced that he wasn't knocked out. Maybe he said he wasn't because he wanted to continue. And again, I guess the medical staff have to take him at his word. But he looked to me like he was spark out. And I think football obviously has an issue with head injuries. It doesn't tend to treat them very seriously. You know, players who clash heads, who are knocked out, who are concussed perhaps, are allowed to play on. And we know more and more how dangerous that can be. Thankfully, there hasn't been anything too serious happen. But, you know, given how often footballers smack heads, there should be a bit more focus on it. And I know that the Arsenal doctor did some courses and some teaching about that, you know, these new rules that come into play. So I don't know. Look, if he said he wasn't knocked out and the medical staff said he wasn't knocked out, there's not much more we can say about it. But I do think perhaps if we had another striker on the bench, that you could have chosen to use him rather than a guy who, even if you're not knocked out and you get a good smack in the head, it hurts and you're sort of discombobulated and you're not 100% afterwards, particularly when you're trying to chase a game.
A bit of grogginess would be understandable, certainly.
Yeah.
I thought, look, we have to take the doctors at their word, don't we? I mean, we're not doctors. We don't know what we're talking about. If they say he wasn't unconscious, then I guess he wasn't unconscious. But it was certainly an alarming scene. And I was actually surprised that he continued, even given the lack of options. I felt that, there's definitely an element of risk in that. And I think it's important that football obviously does start to take this matter more seriously. Other sports are way ahead in that respect. So, you know, I mean, but it's, again, without being there, you know, there are people making assessments live on the field. You have to hope that they're making the right call in that instant.
Mm, yeah, you'd like to think that the player's welfare is more important than any goals that we might need from a game.
Basically, yeah, that they're making a decision based on medical reasons rather than footballing ones.
Yeah, but again, the track record of football in general wouldn't leave you too confident. But look, again, without all the information and without conclusive evidence one way or the other, we have to assume that he wasn't knocked out. But, you know, I'm not sure I believe it.
All right.
Here's a question from Zanzi Bar and Grill at Zanzi Bar Grills. Could be a free meal on this one for us.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, it's in Lagos, though. So that could be...
Yeah, but a free meal. Think about it.
Yeah. Well, we could go.
Worth it in the end.
Anyway, he says, what do you make of the slightly more forgiving stance fans have taken with Petr Cech, even though he was partly at fault? Because, you know, let's face it, had it been Chesney, had it been Ospina, Knives would be well and truly out.
Oh, they certainly would be. Yeah, no, I would have taken Ospina apart, I imagine, for a similar arrest. And Chesney too. I mean, Chesney would have taken an awful lot of stick. It's partly just a good grace thing that new signings are given. I think all new signings go through that. You know, when they're adapting to the team, there's an element of, I don't know, they've got good grace, haven't they? Because there's a desire for them to do well.
Mm.
And with Cech particularly, you know, it's been hailed as such a big signing for us that I think people will understandably want that to come good, and they will be loath to come down on a player who's moved from a rival club for a big fee and who's seen as the solution. I think that seeing him as the solution is probably a bit of an issue. I think, as you touched on earlier, I don't think one player ever is, and I'm not sure that... I do think while he's an upgrade, I don't think necessarily he'll be the difference. But I think that it is one game. It is one game. And that's kind of true of the whole thing. I mean, as awful as it was, it is one game. It's a long season ahead. Hopefully we have a campaign that means that we sort of look back at this and if not laugh, then certainly smile ruefully. Because there's a long way to go. And I think that Cech, I mean, I don't remember him ever having a game like that for Chelsea, do you?
No, not really.
That's worrying, isn't it? Yeah. He arrives at Arsenal in one match. He's a player transformed.
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, literally, you know, probably the worst he's ever played.
Yeah, that is a slight concern. But I do think that, you know, one of the benefits of his experience is that he should know what it takes to recover from that, unless he needs, you know, a bit of goalkeeper whispering from Loshilan or Lolichan or whichever it is.
Yeah.
Without his mentor there, will he be all right to recover? But you'd think so. A guy of 34 years of age, or, you know, should be able to get his head right. In terms of the sympathy, I do think that probably everybody was a bit harsh on both goalkeepers to an extent last year. I know I was certainly accused of being harsh on Spina at times, and I think I felt that Chesney was unduly criticised for some of his performances. And I suppose the lesson there is just about fan perception. You know, we see, to an extent, what we want to see, right?
Yeah, true. All right, let's have another question.
Another question. What should we have? Okay. I thought this was quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
From Steve Moore, at Steve Moore 4116, he says, how much was our attacking play yesterday stunted by fielding our two most defensive fullbacks?
I think we missed Bellerin, that's for sure.
I thought so, definitely.
Yeah. And I think Debussy looked like a guy who hasn't played a lot of football, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't a surprise. Well, it kind of was a surprise that he was taken off because we didn't put on a defender. I think we stuck Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain somewhere in the right back region to take him off and obviously have a go at winning the game or getting back into the game. But yeah, maybe it was a little bit, but I think it had less to do with the fullbacks and a lot more to do with the midfield, in my opinion. You know, I think. In games like this, Mesut Ozil should be pulling the strings for Arsenal. You know, he's got the quality, the experience, the fitness, the pre-season, everything. And I thought he had quite a good few moments. There was one dribble I thought that he was going to score from, or if not score, get a penalty. You know? But... yeah, I don't think it had a lot to do with the fullbacks. I think it had more to do with midfield for me.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think I do think that we missed, you know, this is a secondary question. Hang on, sorry. Where is it now? Basically, somebody asked, who was it? Yes, Sam Hill. So it was one of the problems yesterday that the Ox was the only player offering pace in the starting 11. And I did feel that... you know, without Bellerin as well, we did lack a little bit of kind of penetration, I guess, in the wide areas.
Sure, but I mean, I think you can look for that in other ways. It doesn't necessarily have to be pace, does it? Because you could look at somebody, for example, like Jack Wilshere or Thomas Rosicki, who can get between the lines in midfield. And we didn't, our midfielders seemed content to sort of just be there, and there wasn't any drive. There was nobody running at the West Ham defence or the midfield to try and create space, to try and make openings. So I don't think it was just down to pace. I think it's to do with having players who can create from midfield in a different way. And perhaps there's an element of sameness, even if they're different players, Cazorla, Ramsey, Ozil, they don't give you that per se. You know, they look for the passes or Ramsey can make a run and get on the end of a pass, but nobody gives you that burst in midfield that maybe Wilshere or Rosicki do. So I think maybe we miss them more than it being a problem with the fullbacks.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a question, and again, a sort of a two-parter. First part is from Ian Sandwell, at Ian_Sandwell, and he wants to know, is there a reason we haven't had a genuinely convincing opening league game since Everton away in 2009-2010? I think we won 6-0 that day. Danielson scoring a great goal. So you know everything went well for us that day.
Yeah, magic.
But interestingly, and I don't know if it ties in at all, Orbino, our pal, he posted something yesterday. Arsenal's opening day result after a long-haul overseas tour. 1-1, drawn 2, lost 2. The previous 10 seasons, when we went on that little training camp to Austria, played a few games, had a game against Boreham Wood, or Barnet, one of those. 1-8, drawn 2, lost 0. He says probably nothing to it, but what do you think?
Wow, that's very interesting, isn't it? I do seem to recall that we used to start seasons on fire at times. I seem to remember us like hammering Middlesbrough on the opening day once upon a time.
4-0 or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I seem to remember a few games like that where we would really come out of the box blocks flying. Less so these days. Maybe it's because... So one theory is that Arsene maybe has changed the way he conditions his players. Maybe he's got more of an eye on, having had all these injury problems in the past, fitness over a season, and that means that they're slightly less sharp right at the commencement. Maybe the foreign tours are a factor. I don't know.
Is it just coincidence?
It could be. I mean, I don't know how much being on a plane makes you worse at positioning a defensive set piece, you know?
Sure, but Arsene Wenger was always opposed to them. And we know that in recent seasons, in recent years, the commercial interests and obviously, you know, the upside of it is going out there, and it's great for the fans and it's great for the team to meet these fans, experience these places. But maybe the downside that Arsene Wenger feared of long-haul travel, I mean, look, we were in Singapore in July. You know, so I don't know. Maybe it's just coincidence, but yeah, you're right. I mean, we don't tend to come out of the blocks the way we used to. I mean, even last season, the opening day win against Crystal Palace, was it in injury time Aaron Ramsey scored?
It was, you know? Poked home on the line, didn't he? And that was not a great performance either. I seem to remember the main positive out of that was Callum Chambers at centre-half, who had a very assured game. But yeah, a bit of a concern. And you know, it's... Again, I hate to repeat myself, but again, the real frustration is that that was the issue 12 months ago, that we started so poorly. And all the focus has been on putting that right, but so far, not so great.
All right, one more from you?
Yeah, let's have a look, see what I've got. Do you know what? I've had quite a lot of the questions that you've asked me. I'll tell you, I'll ask you this one because it touches on a subject, a man close to your heart, or perhaps not. Charlie Parmentier asks, is Coughlan starting to show Alex Song's long ball syndrome? Is there a danger he's getting too big for his boots?
I don't know about that, because I think if you look at the way Coughlan has played, and I'm sure one of the video guys, you know, the guys who put together these videos of the players, the compilations, and like within minutes of a game, they're like, here's Coughlan against whatever. I'm sure that if you were to go back and look at those videos of Coughlan, that he has been capable of spraying the ball around left and right, you know, and making decent long passes. I think on a day like yesterday, when he didn't play well, people will point to those misplaced passes as his big weakness. I think he's much better on the ball than people say, and he is capable of distributing it pretty well. But yeah, maybe, I don't know. Look, for the most part, in every game he's played for us since he's come back from his loan, he's been really, really, really good. And I think there was always a danger that the minute he had one bad performance, people would say, well, that's the real Coughlan. And maybe it is.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it is. But, you know, I doubt it. I just think perhaps there's a tendency to look immediately for the most negative side of things. And I think he played badly yesterday. No question about that. But I don't think it was... I think that was an anomaly compared to what he's given us in the last 6 months since he came back. So I think you have to account for that from time to time. You know, if a striker can have a bad game, if a goalkeeper can have a bad game, a centre half can have a bad game, you know, so too can a defensive midfielder like Coquelin. And I think because of the position that he's in, it looks a bit worse than it is, maybe.
Yeah. So he shouldn't be worried until he gets the bleached hair and the special massive low slung shorts.
Yeah, exactly. And he turns up wearing a suit of armour with Diamante all over it, that kind of stuff. You know the way Song did.
Okay. Yeah, indeed. He's
all right.
Up to that.
All right. Final question, very quickly from me. This is from Dave Mitchell at Tex Elmore. And he said, my daughter was Ozil's player escort at the Community Shield, where they all bring out a child each. They get a free kid with every appearance in the Community Shield, which is very nice. She said that he had soft hands, very soft hands. Mm. Who do you think has the gnarliest hands in this Arsenal squad?
Great question.
It's the big issue of the day.
It is the big issue. Gnarliest hands. I might have to go with Koscielny. There's something gnarly about him in appearance.
Mm.
I always feel like the bones are protruding from his face in quite a pronounced way. And that might be replicated in his hands. So I'm going to go Koscielny, I think.
Koscielny for gnarliest hands. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a very gnarly squad, I would say.
No, true. They seem sculpted and supple.
Well manicured.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say...
Who would you go for?
Alexis.
Maybe.
I'd say so, because, you know, when he gets tired running on his legs, I'd say he just runs on his hands and just like... like one of those crazy dream monsters that comes after you sometimes, you know? When you're trying to run away and then your feet are stuck and then this upside down running on his hands man is after you. You know those dreams?
Oh, that sounds absolutely terrifying.
Mm. So yeah, I'd say Alexis.
But I will have those dreams now. You planted the seed.
All right. Thank you to everyone for your questions today. Sorry this wasn't the most upbeat, cheery of podcasts, but that's really nothing much to do with us.
No, don't blame us.
No, please. We'll have the Arsecast for you on Friday. Another Arsecast extra for you next Monday after a game on Sunday. Let's hope it's the opposite of this one.
I'm sure it will be.
All right.
I'm not sure at all.
No, neither am I. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.